Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joan Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is June 26th on 2014, and today we're going to be talking about visualization and mental imagery techniques and strategies for both sports and business, and also any of your questions that you have. We talked about some of this last time, and so we'll kind of go into a part two this time. Give you some examples, talk about mistakes to avoid when doing visualization and do's and don'ts of visualization, what problems, you know, the kinds of issues that you can solve with mental imagery, and why the senses are important, you know, in bringing in all three or five senses to your mental imagery process, and then kind of talking about the different types of visualization you can use and some examples of some speedy results and using visualization in business settings as well as sports settings. You can use this basically anywhere. And a lot of times you might have a crossover client that, you know, is both in sports and business. You know, say a businessman who also plays golf or a woman. That happens a lot. And so they ask you, maybe come in for one issue, you know, with wanting help or coaching with, say, they're in their sport, and then it turns out they're, you know, having issues in their business as well. So you can work with them with being able to, you know, use these same techniques in business. I had one client, you know, recently that was a marathoner. In the marathon, and then at work, the two techniques worked well. And then she was going for trying to pass the bar exam with in law at the law school, and said, "Could these techniques be used there with you know, passing my bar exam, which is one of the most stressful, you know, exams you can take?" So we worked on that, and being able to take good care of herself while she was getting ready for the exam and not cramming, and it worked out great that she passed the first time with the bar, and it was largely due, she said, to the, yeah, those visualization techniques and coaching her on how to go through the process in a really healthy way. Yeah, did new people join us here? Who?
This is Alex.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, good to have you here.
Okay.
Yeah. Was there someone else?
Hi, Joanne. It's Amy too.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Great. Good to have all of you, and Greg's here too, and wanted to, yeah, we're talking today about visualization for sports and for business, so just kind of introducing some topics here, and I've got, was there someone else that just joined us? I didn't know if I heard another ding, maybe not, I'm just hearing dings. So, you know, and this, you know, visualization process, how it's unique. We could talk about different steps, seven steps to effective imagery. So, yeah, so first I wanted to just ask all of you, you know, any questions that you have that are coming up, any progress that you made or successes, or and also questions you might have about the process of mental imagery, what's worked for you, what hasn't worked, that kind of thing. Anyone can join in.
Joanne, this is Amy. I have a question for you. I'm going to be starting the Pennsylvania Ballet Camp on July 8th.
What ballet?
The Pennsylvania Ballet Summer Camp.
Okay, great.
And the kids, I'm going to have three different classes, and the kids will be probably between the ages of 13 and 19. And I want to do, they really enjoyed it last year. They loved the visualizations at the end where I was reading different meditations and things. So that's definitely something that I want to do a little bit more of with them the last couple minutes, because I only spent about 5 minutes doing it with them last time,
uh-huh.
And also getting much more into imagery. And I wanted to see if there are any exercises that you could recommend that might be fun for them to do, even if it was sort of an interactive thing.
Yeah, for the ballet.
It's going to be, I'm doing that 2 days, and then I'm going to do a tennis camp. But they're all about the same age, so I can, you know, I can use this for everything.
Yeah. I would say that, there's all kinds of exercises you can do. One is, you know, for kids to start off with is, kind of getting in touch with your five senses. And so, that's a way to, like when people think visualization, they think of, just visualizing, just seeing things, but you can, you know, the more senses you incorporate, the better. So, did someone else just join us? I heard a ding. Anyway, if you join us, just let me know. So I just know welcome everyone on the call. Anyway, with senses, you can, maybe have them close their eyes.
Hi, Joanne. Sorry.
Oh, is this?
I had it on mute.
Monica?
This is Monica, yeah.
Oh, yeah, from Costa Rica, right?
Yes. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us, yeah.
Sorry for the delay, yeah.
That's okay. Amy was asking, we've got Amy and Greg and Alex and Monica.
Hi, everybody.
Call here.
Hello.
Yeah, and Greg, yeah. So anyway, we were talking about, since Amy's doing a summer camp for Pennsylvania Ballet and also for tennis camp. So I was thinking some of the exercises you might do that would be fun and interactive would be, starting with the senses, having them close their eyes and imagine different things. You know, say you take imagine that you've got a lemon in front of you, or grapefruit, and that you're holding on to it, and you're opening it up, and you're getting ready to eat it, and you're looking at it, and you're smelling the grapefruit or the lemon, something citrus, and that and you're bringing it up closer and closer to your mouth, and just notice what happens with your senses. And kind of hold that imagery for a few moments, and then have people open their eyes and ask them, so what happened? And a lot of people will say, my mouth started to pucker up, or I had saliva in my mouth, kind of getting ready to eat the lemon or eat the grapefruit or the orange or something. And it shows it's hard to do that kind of imagery without some kind of visceral or physical reaction. So it can show people the power of the mind-body connection, and how when you visualize something, even though it's not there, you don't have a lemon in your hand, you're just visualizing it, but you're opening it up and getting ready to put your tongue on it, your body is already getting ready to eat the lemon. If you can, the more you can describe it in detail, then they'll get it. You could even put up a picture of a lemon or something on an open one on a screen, so they can really get a sense of it. And then have them open their eyes and say, okay, what did you experience? And people say, yeah, guy, got all this saliva in my mouth. My mouth is ready to eat. is kind of preparing to eat this citrus thing, or you don't usually just put your tongue right on a lemon. And so that is a real eye-opener for a lot of people. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Something fun, especially for kids, because they like things that are, they're really into their imagination and all, very creative. And often they'll come up with things that you hadn't even thought of, too, that they notice about that. So that's one thing you could do. So that would be one for the senses, for the sense of taste. And then you could have one for another visualization for your sense of the visual sense. So you could imagine, just pick just about anything. Imagine a ball out in front of you, and, it's a big beach ball, and then you could have them imagine a thought, an unwanted thought, something that gets in the way, like self-doubts, like I can't do this, or I'm not good enough, I'm not strong enough, which are thoughts that a lot of kids have a lot of times. And So then you can just imagine putting that thought in a big beach ball and then, you know, kind of exhale out. And now imagine it turning into a sock, you know, smaller. It's going away, so it looks like a soccer ball. And then take another, you know, blow it out again, and now it's down to the size of a baseball. And then it's down to the size of a golf ball. And then take one final breath out, and then it's just, and then it's gone. Poof, it's gone. Just imagine it just kind of dissolving into the air. And you can, that's a good way to both, you know, it's doing two things, getting into their senses of that visual sense of making something, you know, seeing something getting from being really big to getting smaller and smaller. And then the second thing it does is allowing them, giving them a technique to be able to let go of unwanted thoughts. So it gives them more power. So if you're doing the tennis and you just made a mistake, you just blew it with the last shot, then you can maybe do that technique to just let go of that thought, let go of the mistake, and then just be able to move on.
Yeah, I like that one too.
Yeah, so that could be good. You know, another one for the kinesthetic sense, your sense of touch, would be something like, you know, you want to get people in touch with their feelings. So just one example I have from, you know, different sport from swimming is, you know, just imagining you're doing the freestyle, and imagine you're pulling a rope. You've got a rope between your thumb and forefinger, and with each stroke, you're pulling that rope down underneath your body and all the way through. And then the next, your arm comes up, and you're taking the rope again and pulling it all the way through. And as you do that, you're pulling yourself all the way across the pool. So that's an example of, you know, the kinesthetic sense, or with ballet, you know, it could be something. Just imagine your, you know, that feeling of gracefulness, and you know, your arms going out to the side, and you know, stretching out, and your fingers, you know, pointed out or upward, and just feel that stretch. You know, just you try to accentuate whatever it is that they feel in that sport that's important. Can you imagine something for ballet that might be good for kinesthetic sense?
Or how about if they have to do a rotation, like spinning or jumping or something like that?
Yeah, that would be good. Close your eyes and imagine that feeling of jumping into the air. And maybe, like, the great thing about visualization is you can slow it down, you can speed it up, like we see so much now on TV or videos of, you know, you see the real action, like the World Cup soccer that's going on right now. They show it from, you know, first in live action, and then we see, like, 10 different cameras, every kind of angle, and they slow it way down to super slow-mo, so that you get, you know, the real detail of what went on. And sometimes if you're learning a new skill, like with ballet, it's helpful to slow it down in your mind first to learn the skill. So imagine, have them imagine maybe that they're jumping up in the air you know, kind of slowing that down so they get all the, see all the different motions and actions that they need to do. And, you know, you could work with the coach on that, too, or the instructor to see exactly the cues that they want the athletes to remember, the dancers to remember, and then incorporate those into a visualization. But, you know, imagining yourself, if you're jumping, you know, that you're squatting down, getting power in your legs, and then pushing off. And feeling that push off from your the ball of your foot, you know, really high, and then extending your legs out and springing into the air with power and that kind of thing. And you could even use an animal as a Sometimes it's helpful to use something different as a as an example of springing, like think of something that springs up like a grasshopper or something. You know, if you just go online and, you know, it's amazing with video, with YouTube, you can find anything and just video, put in the search words in the box, and put in grasshopper jumping or something, and then you'll see, you know, in slow motion and see how it, you know, it's the same kind of motion. It's taking its legs and it's coming down and then pushing up. And so all kinds of actions are happening there to be able to, you know, grasshopper is probably the world-class jumper or any animal like that that jumps up. And you could also, you know, use other sports, other athletes that do jumping, like in basketball, jumping for making a basket. And sometimes it's helpful for athletes, like in ballet, if you're always looking at ballet and always thinking ballet, sometimes if you think out of the box and think, okay, with jumping, what other athletes do jumping or what other animals do that, and what does that look like? And then it can help you to get a real, maybe get more power in your jumping, or power, speed, in what you want to do. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that's good. I like that with the animal.
Yeah. Jumping or a rocket taking off, you know, any of those kind of things. Thinking of you have to sort of wind up before you're, you know, to get a really good jump, and so you need to, and all that usually happens really fast, so that people can't really see what's happening. But if you kind of slow it down in your mind, and look at videos on YouTube that are, you know, sort of slow after slow motion, then you'll be able, then they can see all of that, and then you could also go on YouTube and just look for ballet jumping, you know, and or they probably have videos of themselves of the Pennsylvania Ballet jumping, and so you use those examples of really good dancers who have done really who have done their jumping really well. And you could show those as an example so people can visualize it. And then once they watch it, then have them close their eyes and then visualize that motion, see themselves doing it maybe in slow motion first, and then picking up the speed to kind of normal speed, because you want to get eventually to being able to just visualize it at the normal speed that you want to do it, to train those neural patterns in the brain to execute the action at just the right speed, at the normal speed there. So that would be good for another exercise to do for ballet. And then tennis could be, you know, the same kinds of things. Throwing, you know, imagine slow, you know, imagine making contact, you know, making contact with the ball in a real slow motion. That's another real kinesthetic, or it could be auditory, you know, hearing the sound of the ball, just bouncing the ball. You could have them close their eyes and just imagine bouncing the ball before they're ready to serve, and then being able to complete that whole motion of the serve really accurately. A lot of people don't realize that there's all these different senses are really important. And it's really key to, the more senses you can incorporate in, the easier it will be for, you know, for making it real. Because events can really be felt and remembered most vividly through the senses, and when the senses are brought into an experience, it makes you pay better attention to the details of how you complete an action or skill. So when you can integrate your emotions and your senses into the preparation for each type of action, And then the goal that with, you know, when you do that with your senses, the goal is to fully experience everything you need to do to be successful in your performances, your training form, your pacing, your balance, you know, especially with ballet, it's balance, all about balance, and range of motion, and even your state of mind and your energy level, all those things you can bring in your senses. So if you want to make, tell your athletes and your dancers, if you want to make a constructive change in your performance, then try to incorporate as many senses as possible into your imagery. So, for instance, you might be able to see yourself bounding up a steep hill, you know, if you're a runner, or hear the sound of the crowd cheering as you come toward the finish line of your sport, or you know, in track, feel your legs, feel the speed of your legs as you surge around the curve of a track, those kind of things. But some athletes might not be as visual, but more kinesthetic. So like I was saying, for swimmers, you know, you have a feel, they need to have a feel for the water in order to excel in the sport. For tennis, you know, just that feel for the racket and making contact with the ball, all that's really important. So, yeah, so that's some ideas with exercises for your athletes. Another thing you can do is, you know, have them do three different types of imagery. First, you know, imagine yourself as an outside observer, kind of external visual imagery. So imagine, like with the ballet, you imagine them being outside, an outside observer, as though you're watching a movie of yourself performing. And so that method's really useful for analyzing your form, like in ballet or tennis, and or distancing yourself from pain if you have you know, some injury that you have to get through. Hopefully it's a short-term injury that's not doing real damage to your body, but if you need to get through something in a performance or a race or a game, if you imagine yourself you know, just from the outside looking at yourself, then that can be really useful for making sure that your form is correct, and for kind of looking at yourself, distancing yourself if you need to, if you feel tired or have a difficult time. And then you can have them do internal visual imagery. So that's the opposite, where you see yourself from the inside of your mind and body. And with this type of imagery, then you imagine, you mentally rehearse what you actually see with your own eyes as you're executing your event. So it's like having a video camera on your head that records what you're seeing and or moving. And you may have seen those little video cameras. They're called GoPros. You see them at sporting goods stores now. It's where you can put it on a helmet, or you can put it on a headband on your head, and then you video everything you see. So it's that kind of... you could even, if you have a sport, you know, like skiing or something, you could actually, or running, or tennis as well, you could visualize, have them try a GoPro, which is this little camera they put on their head, and then actually video it and see what, and then they sort of see from the inside out what's going on. But you, even without that, the idea is just to be able to visualize from the inside of your body. And that's what we do most of the time, that type of visualization. And then the third type is like kinesthetic imagery. You can have them do an exercise with just feeling, where you don't see anything, but you just experience your senses. You experience it through the sense of touch. So maybe feeling the wind on your face, or noticing your arms, you know, like in a rotation with ballet, noticing the arms propelling them around in a circle. That kind of thing. Because when you use your senses, it makes your imagery come alive, and then it allows, that process allows you to bring your mind and your body and your spirit into your preparation. And that technique, it really provides, I think, a new dimension to your mental training, and it brings you closer to what the real situation will be like. So if you can feel your body sensations as if it were happening right now, it allows your mind and body and soul to, you know, prepare more completely for whatever it is that you want to pursue. So that's some ideas. That was a long answer to your question, Amy.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
Yeah, but that's an idea. Anyone else? Others of you have questions about how to use imagery or any kind of challenges you've come up with or any clients you're working with?
I have a question.
Yeah, hi, Alex.
Yeah, hi. What about working with those athletes that have difficulty just paying attention? I mean, they are easily distracted and have a hard time just staying within their own sensory emotions. I mean, it works for a lot of people, but sometimes if typical diagnosis is the ADD or those who are hyperly active. For them to bring images and stay with it, it is somewhat challenging. So I'm wondering if you have encountered this situation, and if you did, how did you deal?
Yeah. Do you have an example? With what sport are you working with?
Golf.
It was golf with adults or kids?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
I mean, is it an adult or a kid that you're thinking of?
Actually, it's an adult.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we try to imagine the swing, and he loses the concentration and the focus on the visualization and gets easily distracted. So the image itself gets broken down, and it's hard to complete entire image of going back and then coming through. So other thoughts come in and interrupt the process.
Yeah. So that's a good question. Attention, just so make sure everyone could hear it. So, Alex, your question is, what if someone? How do you work with someone that has trouble with their attention span and being able to hold their attention on that particular image? And that's a really common thing. And it could come from, you could ask them why, too, if they say that they're having trouble with attention, where that's coming from, if they know maybe they've been diagnosed as ADD or
mm-hmm.
ADHD, which
yes.
is, hyperattention disorder, deficit hyperactivity
yes.
disorder, which is, the movement part, the activity part of it comes in as well, or just ADD is attention deficit disorder. They could have been diagnosed with that issue, or could be taking medication for it, so you can ask them that. Or sometimes it can just be something short-term, like they're just distracted. You know, there may be some major thing that's going on in their life. They just lost a parent or just got divorced or just lost their job or something major, and they're just really distracted from a major life event that went on or something at work that's not going well. So if that's the case, then you could actually, just do some counseling coaching with them around that issue. Sometimes if it's not, really heavy-duty therapy, but just coaching, you can help them with whatever it is that they're going through first, and then that could help them to work with their sport as well. It can help them to relax. So it's good to find out, what the source of the attention problem is, and ask them how long it's been going on, if it's something that they've had since childhood, or if it's something recent. Sometimes it can be the skill level. It's difficult, all of a sudden they're having to do more, in some schools or some programs, the coach is asking them to do a lot more than they're used to, and there's a lot more pressure there, and so they have difficulty keeping attention because they feel like they're under so much pressure from the coach or from their parents or from kids wanting to get into, a scholarship into a college. All that brings in, new kinds of issues that make it difficult to focus on what they need to with their sport. So it's good to just kind of do an assessment about where the attention issue is coming from, and see if you can help with that, the source as well. And then with regard to, Alex, your just the specifics of a question, your question of how to help the athlete with their attention span, first you could just have them do an exercise, and this is good for anybody to do, I think, you know, a short visualization exercise that's, you know, that you could use with any sport where they just close their eyes and just imagine something in, let's say, you know, if they're in your office or in your room, you could, you know, just say, look at a picture on the wall or something at the far side of the room, and then just see how, close your eyes and see how long you can focus on that object. It could be a ball or something, you know, focus on this ball, and just, you know, take, say, 30 seconds or a minute, and say, and then just have them keep focusing on that ball, and then afterward ask them, okay, how long could you keep your focus on the ball there? And when, you know, did you notice when your attention went away? And then you have them do that a couple times and just see if you can help them to, you know, keep their attention on that one object a little bit longer. So it's just kind of like stretching out your attention, you know, the time that you're going to focus on one thing. So that's one exercise that you could do that just is kind of a, it's an awareness exercise to help them to focus on some object in front of them. And then you can also, I think one good exercise for attention is just that centering exercise, which is just to, you know, take in some deep breaths, put your hand on your abdomen, and, you know, imagine there's a ball, a balloon inside your stomach, and then as you breathe in, just imagine, you want to put your hand just a couple inches below the belly button to check your breathing, and then as you breathe in through your nose, and focus on your center, so its center is just a couple inches behind your belly button, so that center of energy inside your body, and just kind of that center of your body, and just imagine that part, because it can help to, you know, an athlete to feel more grounded, more centered, more focused. So you imagine that as you're breathing in through your nose, focusing on your center, and then just breathe out through your mouth and relax. And as you breathe out, just imagine there's those tiny valves or tiny openings at the ends of your fingertips and toes. So as you breathe out all the tension or any unwanted thoughts out through those special openings in your fingertips and toes. And have them do that about 3 to 5 times. So as you're breathing in, breathe in again, breathe in through your nose, focus on your center, and then breathe out through your mouth and relax. And then you can add to it another technique, or do this one separately, is just as you breathe in, just imagine that you're rooted in the ground. Imagine that you're a tree that is centered, you have roots that are going into the ground, and that you're feeling really strong and powerful and centered there in the ground, and that it's a really good grounding technique, so you feel like you're getting energy, you know, from the ground, and that you're feeling strong inside. And so you just imagine that this tree is like rooted in the ground, almost like a redwood tree that has, you know, roots that go in the ground and then spread out everywhere. And so that can be a good technique for, you know, just centering, for feeling, it gives your mind something to do so that you feel centered inside. And when people are feeling really distracted, if they can do a centering technique like that, then they feel more, you know, gives your brain something to come back to, like a foundation. And so that's a good one technique to try as well. And then another one is, you know, brain exercises. There's a large body of research showing that they're sort of synchronizing exercises. So there's a large body of research showing that alternating left and right body movements helps to synchronize the left and right parts of the brain. And so it helps improve your attention, you know, in your concentration, and it also improves your creativity and your memory, your coordination. So any kind of continuous left and right motion is a good thing for brain synchronization. It's another term for it is whole brain learning. So if you, for instance, you know, there's simple exercises that are based on 25 years of neurophysiology research and also my clinical experience that I've done with a lot of athletes that I've seen that our bodies are very much a part of all our learning, and learning is more than just a brain function. So really every nerve and every cell in your body is a network contributing to your performance. And so, like you say, Alex, if you're having an athlete that's having difficulty with concentration, chances are that they're having difficulty with that brain function. And so what you can do is have them do some sort of left-right motion. So standing, for instance, just a simple exercise like standing up and and walking in place or marching in place and raising your right knee and putting your left hand to your right knee, raising your left knee and putting your right hand on your left knee. So, or just kind of walking, walking in place kind of thing. Yeah, that's a left-right type motion, and helps to synchronize the brain so that you get, you can have more attention and a better concentration on what you're doing. So that's a simple kind of centering or attention building exercise as well.
That's something great.
Like that. And then, what have you tried different things with him, Alex, with your attention with the golfer and his swing?
I think that when I helped him to visualize not so much himself, but visualize maybe somebody else performing the way he would like to perform, that was easier for him.
Uh-huh.
So it's a different way of, it's the exterior imagery. That worked easier for him. The interior one, that's very, very challenging. He cannot do that.
Yeah. I think that's good. Imagine someone else
that's
performing.
That's right. Yeah, like a watch on a video, screen, watch maybe himself or maybe somebody else. And seeing exactly the type of movement that he wants to see to perform.
I think that's a really good idea, yeah, because it also is a attention getter. It helps to keep your attention right there on the screen. And you're seeing the movement and, say, an instructor's voice or somebody commentating about that, then the senses are more engaged. You're looking at using visual and the auditory sense. If he can go back and forth from that to, practicing his own swing, and then maybe doing his own swing just a few times, and then going back to watching the video, then it gives your mind something to focus on. So it's not focusing on the same thing over and over again, but actually being able to look at something else outside of himself and then practice it for a short time, kind of back and forth. And I think that's really good, yeah. And another way to do it is, yes, the example of the 10-year-old baseball kid that I was working with recently that I've mentioned. He had ADD and ADHD, and so we had him visualize, do a little visualization in a chair, but then he had trouble, just like your client, Alex, had trouble paying attention and would get real fidgety and just lose attention. So then I'd have him stand up and say, okay, let's do a dress rehearsal. Let's imagine, he was in my office right here, and just imagine yourself picking up the bat. He didn't have a bat with him, you know, at the time, but just, you know, an imaginary bat, and see yourself at the base and doing mm-hmm. your swagger back and forth and, you know, swaying back and forth, getting your bat
yeah.
ready and watching the pitcher and watching for signs and saying, you know, certain power words to himself and, you know, kind of doing all of that while he was moving, then getting him moving like that helped to keep attention. So oftentimes people with, you know, they have problems with attention span, they need to have some kind of movement going or be able to be moving their body and also, you know, different things going on, some variety, so that they don't get so bored. So maybe with your athlete with golf, you could also, Monica, I think you're working with golfers too, right? I don't know if Monica was there from Costa Rica, I think, but she may be on mute or something since she's in another country.
Hello.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
You are.
Yeah. Sorry, I couldn't take the mute off.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, you're working with golfers as well, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not working just yet, but that's my, that's going to be my area that I want to work with,
And you have two daughters, is it?
I do have two daughters that play,
Play golf, and Alex is talking about a golfer as well, and and Greg, do you work with golfers too? Do I recall? I don't know if Greg might be on mute too. But anyway,
Kids, what I found, because I'm practicing with my kids, doing all the visualization and things, that it helps to me, it helps with them to do it at a time where they, after they have exercised a bit and they really have that energy out. And so that's not that they're in the middle of doing exercise, but right after we're, you know, they're ready to settle down. And so maybe, you know, do it at a time after that person has gotten that energy out of the system.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. The timing is important for...
Yeah, because if you have to move while you're doing the visualization, I don't know, I kind of not see it, but if they're at a time of the day where, you know, they're kind of winding down or ready to just focus inside instead of just moving, might be a good way to do it.
Yeah, I think that's good too, yeah. And so that's one of the mistakes. Yeah, I was going to talk a little bit about mistakes that people sometimes make with visualization. If you do it when an athlete isn't really ready, as you say,
it doesn't work, right?
Yeah, they're too antsy and too energetic, and they might not be able to settle down. Then you can wait till after they've exercised it. That's a good point, Monica. Or they can. There's two different two different ways to visualize. One is, you know, when you're quiet and in a, you know, sitting down or laying down and visualizing, like right after you've had a really good workout or something, that's a great time to visualize something. And but if they are, you know, involved in the sport itself, then, you can also do active visualization. So... while they're actually doing the sport, have them imagine something. So, like with Alex, imagine the swing. Have you tried that, Alex?
Imagining his swing?
Yeah, while they're swinging, giving them something to imagine and then have them do that while they're actually swinging.
Well, he would imagine somebody else swing, or maybe he would imagine himself swinging, as if you were to watch him on a screen.
Yeah.
But it could be also, like, you can imagine, like, I know my daughter does this, like, she thinks she's the ball, and so she hits the ball, and she feels like she's the ball flying over the range, you know? Kind of, you know, just using the imagination to visualize something related to the movement they're doing, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Your daughter, imagine she's the ball?
She's the ball. Yeah, she hits
it.
Yeah,
kids always do. Often do that. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, she likes to think she's the ball, and she just goes. And so she hits the ball where, you know, in the center, and so she just imagines this happy face, and she has to hit the nose of the ball. You know, just kind of using an active visualization, like you're saying.
Huh?
Just to help with the swing. Mm-hmm.
I like that. It gives the ball a happy face.
Yeah, yeah. She actually does it. Yeah, she colors the balls and yeah,
huh.
And she, the nose, and she has to hit the nose. Yeah, a happy face with a nose, I guess. But and that helps. Yeah, but like you say, it's an active visualization of the of what she's doing. Mm.
Yeah, I like that. Anything that you can do to make it more colorful and more, like you say, you make the ball. That's great for kids, especially to have the ball like have a personality almost.
Right.
And,
no kidding. Yeah. Mm.
It's not just this thing just sitting there, but it's your friend. And,
well, she had this friend that was bothering her, or not friend, a kid at school, and so she's like, I'm hitting hard today, because that kid was, I'm imagining just the face of that kid. So anyway, I mean, they have an imagination that it's beyond what we can, you know, tell them. So sometimes asking them, what do you want to think of this, and it helps.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. What do you want the ball to? Give the ball a name, or you know,
mm-hmm.
you can, all kinds of things that you can do with that. So, but one thing you can do. But I think people that you know, with your question, Alex, with the energy kind of getting back to or being able to keep their attention. Sometimes if you can kind of switch it up a little bit so that they're not maybe practicing the same thing over and over again, but if they're losing their attention with one thing, then if they're doing long shots, then switch to practicing putting for a little bit.
Oh,
and
I see.
Then,
okay.
And then going to other kinds of strokes, you know, so that they're just being able to switch their thinking a little bit and not get stuck in a rut somewhere.
Mm.
Do anything you can to keep it active. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Monica, that's great. And I really like your examples there. anything you can do to keep it active, especially with kids, you want to be able to, you know, have them give their, you know, share their experience too, talk about it. So those are great questions. Thanks. Do people have other questions about using visualization or other things that you're challenges you're coming up with? Yeah, let me talk a little bit about the mistakes to avoid. I wanted to show you a couple of those. Things that you want to avoid are if the patient isn't, your client isn't quite ready. Let's say you're doing a first session and they're have a lot to talk about and they're just yet not ready to settle down. Then you might want to wait till the second session to do a visualization. I've made that mistake before early on, and where you try to do a visualization with them right away and they're just not quite ready for that. They just really want to connect with you first. And then it's better just to really spend time building rapport and having a good conversation with them. So you want to make sure that you do that in the first session, and then maybe the second session, do the a visualization after you've talked with them a bit, and you know, really, and do that, do the pre-visualization assessments that you know, we have in the modules of the training. So if you can visualize that, and or, you know, that's one mistake to avoid. Another mistake is, you know, if a client is, depends on the age of the client, if your visualization is not age appropriate. So, for instance, if it's a child, then you want to make the visualization shorter, I'd say 5 minutes or so, maybe no longer than 5 minutes. If it's an adult, you know, you could go for 10 or 15 minutes. So it's just depends on the person. And if it's an adult that has ADD or is trouble with attention, then you might want to make it shorter. So that's one mistake to avoid, is making a visualization that isn't appropriate in length for the person. So, and you could ask them, too, after you make one visualization, was that too long or was that too short? Would you like it? What could I do differently? So get some feedback from the client about that. Another mistake to avoid is if the client is, if they've had any trauma in the past, just occasionally you may find this, that they have trouble closing their eyes. If they close their eyes, then their mind goes to that trauma or goes to something, you know, really disturbing for them. So you could ask them about that. And if that's the case, then you can just have them do a visualization with their eyes open and just have them stare across the room at just something, you know, just a place on the wall across the room. So you can just have them stare at a corner in a room or something, and then just do the visualization that way, and that's perfectly fine too, as long as they're not looking at something distracting. So I used to work at a hospital where there were a lot of women had been abused before, and so they were and been really traumatized, and they said it was most of the time they had difficulty closing their eyes because they would just go to, you know, really just, you know, difficult images or disturbing images that they have, you know, in their mind, and so they couldn't focus on what we were visualizing. So, you know, we just have them stare across the room, and that works out just fine too. Or if you have a child that has ADD or adult that has trouble, you know, really focusing, then just have them stare at something across the room, and that works. That'll help them to just be able to still focus on what you are talking about. Another mistake you want to avoid is just doing a canned visualization or something that's too general and not specific to their situation. So the more you might lose them if you're doing that, the thing that makes this performing edge coaching technique unique, I think, that no one else is doing or not many people are doing, is that we're actually really laser focusing in on the needs of that particular client. And so that's what people will pay you a lot for. Clients will pay you to create a visualization where you're using their name and using their sport or their talking about their issues. And it makes them it's really you know, specific to them, and so they're going to really, if you use their name at the beginning and a few times in the middle and at the end of the visualization, that keeps their attention too. That's another technique, Alex, and, you know, when you were asking about attention, if you can use their name a few times, that brings their attention back to the situation, and so just imagine, you know, be able to do that for them and to try to get into their situation. Try to write down ahead of time as much as you can about how they express their challenges, their goals. Try to get into their language, how they see things, how they feel things. how they experience it, and then you know, with that pre-visualization assessment, and then you'll be able to really, you know, create and personalize the visualization for them. Then when you're doing the visualization, if you can really get into it yourself, that's another mistake people make sometimes. If you're just reading something, reading a script, sometimes it comes across as if you're reading. But if you can just write down a few words and write down the things that they've said and then just paraphrase and really try to get into their world, their visual, their what they're thinking, what they're feeling as you're doing the visualization, really be in that experience, and it'll come across in your voice, and all the feeling and the power will be there, so that you can really take them into that experience of whatever it is that they want to achieve. So you want to try to really make it specific to them and their situation. If they have a particular game coming up, then really focus on that game and what it is they want to achieve there. I'm working with a girl right now, 17-year-old girl that's wanting to qualify for nationals in swimming, and so we're working on, you know, real specific kinds of things like the turns, going into the turns of the pool, and how she wants to be able to put on horse blinders instead of looking at, she tends to look left and right at the turn and see where she is compared to the other athletes, and then she really kind of sizes herself up and does too many mathematical computations in her head, and so, which is a distraction. And so we're working on her imagining putting on horse blinders like a horse would, so that she can just focus on the turn and building into the stroke and only focusing on what she's doing, keep her mind in her own lane instead of comparing herself to what all the other swimmers are doing. So that's we call that sort of the horse blinder exercise. So if you can visualize something like that, you know, or do something really specific to their issue. And also, sometimes one mistake is not focusing on their pain, their problem, only just focusing on goals. Goals are really important. But if people will pay you the most for solving a problem or for really getting to their pain and working on that. So if you can work on, you know, really identifying what it is that they're struggling with the most and kind of zero in on that particular thing, like with this one client, the 17-year-old girl that I'm working on toward nationals, she said, you know, I put too much pressure on myself. So we zeroed in on that part and talked about what do you say to yourself. And she was saying, I'm worried that if I don't swim at a certain time, I won't be able to go to this meet. And I'm concerned that I say I'm not good enough, I'm not fast enough. And she worries herself to death. So we're focusing on visualizations and creating mental imagery around just, you know, relaxing, having fun, and lightening up, and being able to allow herself to celebrate the competition, so that it's more fun for her. So that is kind of solving the problem of too much worry and too much pressure. So that's kind of an example of that. So those are some, and some of the problems that maybe we could just chat about that just a little bit for a couple of minutes, about the problems that you can solve with mental imagery, or what kinds of problems your clients come up with that you'd like to address. Does anyone have, you know, kinds of problems that you could see they've given you that you, and then we can work on that with how to solve them with mental imagery.
Joanne, this is Amy. I'm working with a golfer who's the top golfer in the state. She just got recruited at Notre Dame.
Wow,
she's
great.
Junior. Yeah, she's doing really, she was the number one alternate for the U.S. Women's Open, which was really exciting. She almost made it.
Wow, congratulations.
And she was playing in a tournament in Rochester. It was on a really challenging course. And she had a couple days where she just didn't play. So I gave her an image to look at, to make up. And I asked her what she wanted the image to be. And so she said that she wanted the image to just to be the flag. So every time she got to, like, the 14th or 15th hole, where maybe she started to fade out a little bit, she started having an image of that flag. Every time she hit her shot, you know, she wants to hit it straight down the middle and to start really, really looking for that flag in her mind, as well as the sound of the ball trickling into the hole when she puts it. And so I think that helped her a little bit, to give her something to focus on that was specific. And we use that.
Yeah, I like that. That is great. Yeah, first, congratulations, Amy, for getting this great client, working with the top golfer in the state and
she's,
number one alternate
for the
Women's Open.
She's such a good kid. She's real. Yeah, she's doing really well.
Yeah, how did you get her as to work with?
Her mom heard about me through someone, and then her parents came over and interviewed me for about an hour and a half, and they decided that they wanted to use me as opposed to somebody who wasn't really involved in the golf world, because that would be different, and they also liked the fact that I had a competitive background in tennis myself, so that I would kind of understand, you know, some of the things that she was going through. But she's been really great to work with. The other thing that I did with her yesterday, and you guys might find this interesting, is I did this webinar that was run by the director of the Character Institute, the VIA Character Institute, and he's a really interesting guy. And it was about the VIA assessment and then how it can be. So what I started using that for is, how can I use these character strengths that people have, these 24 strengths, and help the athlete understand what they are and whether they're underplaying them or overplaying them in different situations. And it was really interesting to figure out how you can help an athlete in a situation like that and draw on their strengths and talk about it and use it and really bring it into their life. So
yeah.
I started doing that with my golfer, too.
Wow, great.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So the image of the flag, you were... did you ask her to just think of an image that an image of success or something positive, or just an image? What was your question to her?
My question to her was, I want you to think about something that's going to divert your attention in a positive way. Something that your go-to thing, something that you're going to think about that is going to strike a chord with you, that's going to make you feel, you know, a positive emotion.
Uh-huh.
And so she came up with the flag.
Yeah.
Because what was happening is she was starting to drift a little bit, like on the 15th hole.
Uh-huh.
She'd do really well, and then she'd fizzle out a little bit. And so I was explaining to her, you know, let's use the imagery, let's have something that you can really attach to your mind that's going to work in a positive way, and almost make yourself, instead of that feeling of fading, to say, okay, this is where I need to rev it up. You know, what can we do to rev you up on the 15th hole? And, you know, so then we started talking a little bit more about nutrition and hydration and making herself possibly eat something, a snack or some almonds after the 14th hole, because it was becoming, her parents thought it was becoming a little bit of a pattern where she may be just getting tired.
Yeah, wow. So that's fantastic.
So that was not the case? There was just a lack of concentration?
I think it was, Well, yeah, I think it may have been lack of concentration, and also in some of these tournaments, they play for 3 days straight. Sometimes they play 36 holes, and by the end of the second or third day, I was explaining to her, you know, you're absolutely going to have moments where you start to fizzle out a little, and then you have to say, okay, I need to refocus now, and so that's normal to understand that you're going to have moments like that, but how can we get you back into it a little bit faster and to understand that it's going to be very difficult. That, you know, the problem with golf is it just takes so darn long.
Yeah.
Day after day, and it's really difficult. It becomes a, you know, a physical thing where you're tired, but I think, you know, the mental part of it, of keeping yourself really concentrated, is a big challenge.
Like a mental fatigue, some of the things.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, mental fatigue. So, yeah, that's fantastic, Amy. And she can look at the flag and think of, does she say when she looks at the flag that she associates that with something? Or that?
Well, we also did some power words. Your power phrases come up with a couple of different words. So
yeah,
she had the image and she had the phrase.
She's done that, or you're going to do that?
Yeah, she did. We did that.
Okay, good. Yeah. You can think of...
She couldn't really think of anything at the moment, so we came up with them. I'm on it. Instead of I got it, I'm on it. And she said, oh, I like that. So, you know, there were just a couple words that she felt good about.
Yeah, that's good. and the flag, you know, you think of a flag, too, as a kind of a symbol of freedom, you know, when you see a flag blowing in the wind, and power and strength and all that, if you can, that's a good thing, too, just to, you know, this flag is up there just kind of flowing in the wind and being able to... you know, it's just a flags. I think it's a really good symbol. Yeah, just of something that's stands for something, and you know, making a statement. So that's good that you thought of that flag. And it was a particular, any particular flag, or just any flag?
No, just the flag, like the, you know, the flag that. Oops, sorry, my dog. The flag that you would see on a hole.
Uh-huh. Oh, right, okay. Right, as opposed to a American flag or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So so she's, yeah, which is the, it's like the goal is right there. so that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm so glad you shared that, Amy. And is she going for the... He said she's the number one alternate for the Women's Open, the PGA.
Yep. And she's played in some tournaments where some of the pros have been in them, and she's been, you know, shooting in the 70s and doing really well. I mean, she's definitely going to get in it at some point. And,
yeah.
And, but the thing that I like about her is that she's become really tough mentally in the last couple years, and been in situations where she's just been able to really turn it around and be very consistent. And that's why she's done so well the last 2 years.
Yeah. And that's what it takes, especially in golf, is that mental toughness, I think. And to out, you know, a lot of, there's a lot of golfers out there, but it's the ones that can... Often it's a mental game, yeah, and outsmart the other athletes and be able to just outthink them as well as even when you get tired, yeah, just be able to rev yourself up again. So, yeah, she can think of the flag as energy, too.
Yeah, that would be good.
And, flag of energy, and ask her what the flag symbolizes for her. Revving up, and you could say almost like a magnet. You know, my magnet technique.
Uh huh. Exactly.
yeah, you think of the magnet as drawing you toward that thing that you want to go towards, so she could kind of put her, you know, you could explain that to her. This magnet is like energy, so if she could put the magnet on the flag, or think of the flag as a magnet, you know, that's pulling her, pulling the ball toward it, that can be really powerful, I think. It can be used for, especially with putting, you know, putting can be so crazy. You think one minute you're really on it, and the next minute you're, you know, the ball goes way off. And so if you're, the flag is there and you're, you know, you're just kind of mentally focused on it and really driven toward that, then it can almost be like you're not just working hard to get to the flag. If you can think of it as the flag is the magnet, you know, pulling the ball there, is this kind of energy.
Yeah, I like that image a lot.
Yeah, a connection between her and the flag, you know. The ball, there's this kind of, you know, just really a strong connection. That can work great. So, yeah, that's great. Well, keep us informed about that and you're going to continue to work with her then?
Yeah. It's been one of the things her parents want me to work with is keeping her really motivated and focused, because she's a very good student. She gets straight A's, and she's already has a full ride to Notre Dame. And so, you know, to give her tangible goals to work towards so that she's constantly improving, that she doesn't just, you know, stay at a certain level, that she's constantly striving to keep performing well and better, and, you know, what's the next thing we're going to plan for. And, you know, it's almost like she's already achieved what most kids are dying to have happen to them. And, you know,
yeah,
it's already in the bag. She already has it.
She's in high school and will be...
Yeah, she just finished her junior year, so she has another full year, but she knows exactly, you know, that she has a full ride and she's going to Notre Dame.
Yeah, gosh, that's worth like $250,000 or more.
Yeah.
And
they have incredible indoor training facilities, and they take the kids to lots of tournaments, so the weather wasn't an issue for her, having to go somewhere warm.
Yeah, that's great. So if you can at some point, you know, get a testimonial from her, that can really help you.
Well, that's, you know, that's the thing. I did ask her mom about a year ago, and her parents are very private about not wanting to reveal. So I have to figure out how I could get a testimonial, you know, maybe without using their name. She was really against it a year ago because she didn't want her name, you know, oh, she's working with a mental coach. So
yeah.
I need to, you know, go back to her again and try to figure out a way that I could get that, because that really would be a great thing to attract more golfers.
Yeah, if you can call yourself a performance coach to her or something like that rather than mental coach, sometimes that can help ease the, and let her know that, you know, all the top athletes, most top athletes are using performance coaches. So it's actually, you know, a lot of athletes brag about their performance coaches. that it's a status, it's becoming a status symbol as opposed to a... it's no longer a stigma kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a very good point to phrase it as in a different way.
Yeah.
Interesting, because my sense of performance is more connected with physical, medicine and vitamins and all kind of a different, very different type of work, whereas mental coach is more with the mind part of the game. That was one of the debates I had when I was trying to put together the name for my business, and I ran the idea to several people, and when they hear the word performance, what they link primarily is with physical exercise and or even use drugs to improve performance. That's mainly the connection, but you seem to have a different approach.
Yeah. I think if you can just talk about... The other thing is we'll just look up, testimonials, sport or top athletes using sports psychologists or performance coaches, and you probably get quotes from a lot of top athletes. Just Google that from other maybe other top golfers, as well as athletes in other sports. And just you could give her examples of that, of all these other athletes that are using those that might help your athlete to be able to, speak up about it too. And that it's actually, it's a real competitive edge, as opposed to, solving, they think of it as like mental problems or something. But, everybody needs a... everybody's got a brain, and everybody needs like that brain coach, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like with Stacey Jagiela, who I worked with, that was the first ever, won the first ever Olympic gold medal in the pole vault. She said, "I have my, I have my pole vault, my athletic coach. I have my strength and conditioning coach, and now with you, I have my my mental coach or my performance coach." So she kind of thought of it as like completing the team.
Mm-hmm.
That her team, she felt like her support team wasn't complete without the performance, without me as her performance coach, kind of thing.
Mm.
So you can think of it that way too. That there's most top athletes, you need a support team of of all kinds of people. They have a nutritionist. Usually, personal trainer, and there's this whole, the whole part of the body that is, the brain is the overrides the function of everything, and that's the part that we overlook the most. But having that brain coach or overall performance coach is what can sort of put the whole program together. So that's one way you can think of it, present it to her. And all of these things we're talking about now, too, are a good way, like when parents call you initially, and if you have a new client and you've got, or a prospect and new parents call and they're asking, I know my child needs this help, but how do I, and you tell them what you do, and then they say, okay, you sold me, but how do I sell this to my child? All these things that we're talking about here are also, tips and strategies for helping your parent to introduce their child to the idea that you need this whole, every top athlete needs a whole support team, and now these performance coaches are part of the whole team, even though you're not working physically as a employed by the whole team necessarily. You're working independently. But still, the athlete has all these different people they can go to for support. So it's really important to have that for their competitive edge. And it's about the performance coach kind of is like the overall makes everything else work, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good way to convince athletes. Amy, with your question about the testimonials too, there's different kinds. Of course, text is good, audio is better, videos is the best. But you can, you could do a text. Maybe she's more comfortable with that. Just a short. You could present just a short phrase or something. Amy's performance coaching program really helped me to. With my golf performance or something like that, something simple would be they might be more prone to letting you have that kind of testimonial as opposed to a video kind of thing.
But you really want to have the name with her ranking, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So are you doing this volunteer or for pay?
No, they pay me.
Yeah, okay. So if it's volunteer, it's a little bit easier to get sometimes to get a testimonial. But so that's good. They're paying you, so you're getting income from that. It's one of those things where you just have to ask her and then ask the parents both, either one, how they feel about it. And if you can present those ideas that I was just mentioning, being a performance coach, you don't have to put in mental coach or sports psychology if they're not comfortable with those terms. Performance coach works
mm-hmm.
well. And, you know, just kind of like say it's a statement just like a regular coach, like your golf coach would, like you maybe give your golf coach a testimonial, a regular golf coach. This is just a performance coach. And that you can say that you wouldn't be giving out any details of your work together, that it's confidential. It would just be a one-sentence statement, more like a kind of a thank you. That can really that would be helpful to you. So you could try to present it that way and see if they'll. You can't force people to, of course, do a testimonial kind of thing. But if you can't get that, then the next thing you could you could just see if she would give a statement, and then just put top golfer, ask her if it would be okay to just put her, her rankings and that kind of thing without the name. I guess that would be the next step. But ideally, yeah, if you can have her name, that would be great. So, you just have to get, it's really important to get permission, that's for sure.
Right.
If you've got a good rapport, give that a try and see what happens. So, great. Well, maybe we could just... that's a great discussion, you guys, Amy and Greg and Monica and Alex. And if you, I think there's others on the call, too, that were on mute. So this recording will be up shortly, and we'll do our next call on July. It's always the second, fourth Thursday of the month, so it would be July the 10th.
10th.
Your next one, and maybe if we could just go around and anything, what was the most helpful thing that you got from today to just kind of reinforce the learning for others and others that might hear the recording? What was the one nugget that you got from today that was most helpful? You guys can jump in. Anybody?
I really like the exercises that you gave, like the citrus fruit and the different ways of for swimmers to feel, the rope. Those are specific exercises that I think, for my interest in kids and juniors, are very practical.
Yeah.
To then make the mind connection to it, yeah.
Good, okay, yeah. Yeah, I think the more you can have really specific practical exercises, that's good. And try to be creative about it. Anything. The great thing about visualization is anything is okay. So great, Monica. Thanks. Yeah. Other
thank
people,
you.
What was the most helpful thing one nugget that you might have picked up today?
For me, I really like the image for my tennis players, slowing down the speed of the visualization. So that the ball's coming, but they're going to, in their mind, really slow it down so they can be well prepared and have very good timing. I like that image a lot. And then I also like what you just said at the end about trying to get the testimonials, explaining it from a different point, from a positive point of view. You know, this is a competitive edge to have and to call it a performance coach. I think people will be more likely to agree to it.
Yeah, exactly. And they can look at it as a status symbol kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah.
That it raises their credibility kind of thing. and gives them more, more really good, another thing that she can add to her title. And I think people really look up to people nowadays that, think that that's a really good thing, that athletes are looking to, that Nike employs sports psychologists now for their track team kind of thing. So it's they realize that it's really important for top athletes that if you don't have that you're really lagging kind of thing. So that's good. Yeah. Other people? Alex or Greg, are you still on the line?
Yeah. No, I think, look, I like the lemon exercise. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, but you're all puckered up.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty good.
The lemon exercise really is a powerful one for realizing that your body responds. One you can do that's like that is the hot, cold, kind of imagine yourself in Alaska, jumping into freezing cold water. And that oftentimes when people visualize, if you build a picture like that, you're a member of the Polar Bear Club and you're jumping in with no wetsuit on, and your skin will probably, you can get goosebumps just thinking about that.
That's right.
So it shows how powerful when your mind goes somewhere, your body follows. So why not use that, all that power for something that you want?
Yeah.
And then imagine them going to Hawaii and it's really hot there and you're sweating and in the lava fields or something, and see if people start sweating or feeling warm. So that can be a good one too, to experience that visualization and a mind-body connection in a powerful way.
Mm-hmm.
So great, yeah. Thanks, Alex. And,
yeah, welcome. Sure.
Monica and Amy, is Greg still there? I think he might have had to leave for a class or something. So. Yeah, great. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks for the people that are on, other people that are on mute as well from other countries here. And so next time, we can, visualization is some, maybe next time we can talk more about visualization for business as well, and some other techniques I got for you, because this is really good. And
cool.
If you have other areas, topics that you'd like us to go over, discuss, just feel free to email me and let me know, and we'll make sure we put them on our schedule here, because this is for you, and the main reason for doing these is to answer your questions and customize this exactly for your needs. So thanks. You guys brought up fantastic exercises or fantastic examples and clients and stuff. I love your questions all the time. Love helping you through all of this. So, that's the world. I just wanted to mention, I'll send you a link to the Huffington Post. I write for the Huffington Post, and HuffPost Live, they have their TV show that's online, and they called me last week, and so I was on just a few days ago to talk about the World Cup. And so I'll send you a link for that. It was really exciting to be on their TV show. They have like 30 million viewers, and just talking about the mental aspects of the World Cup and how many, Landon Donovan, who's our top U.S., was our top U.S. soccer player in the last World Cup, is on there too, on the same show that I'm on, talking about how he uses sports psychologists. And also you can point to people like that in the World
Cup. Is the match over right now?
What's that?
Is that match over, the U.S. against Germany?
No.
The U.S. is losing 0-1.
Oh,
right now. It's still going on, right?
Yep.
Right.
We're right in the middle of it.
Okay,
right now.
For Costa Rica then.
Oh, gosh. We have to visualize the U.S. doing well. can send them good energy here.
Yeah,
it's really exciting, all the World Cup stuff right now. And but you can point to people like that that are actually, and there was a guy, if you just Google it, England, a guy from England using meditation and World Cup soccer, the article will come up about him, a guy in England that's one of the players is using meditation before his games. and visualization. So you can point to people like that that is happening right now on the world sports arena. The World Cup, the largest, world's largest, you know, sporting event that's, you know, viewed by more people. Many more people view the World Cup than view the Olympics, actually. You know, and it's pretty amazing. So this stuff is alive and well out there, visualization and mental training.
Thank you, Dr. Chuan.
So, great. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. It's really an honor to talk with you today, and we'll talk to you. We'll be in touch in the next this replay will be up shortly, and talk to you on July the 10th. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne.
Okay,
thank
have a good
Joanne.
Day.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
You too. Bye-bye.